What Really Happened with your host, Mike Rivero. The history the government hopes you never learn. Here is your host, Michael Rivero. What Really Happened with your host, Mike Rivero. Because World War III is a really bad idea. Here is your host, Michael Rivero.
And folks, as you probably know by now, it's not Michael Rivero, but I really like the guy. I've been on the show a number of times. And I got a little bit different approach because I believe that without delving in to the realities of who rules us, and you know, Voltaire is supposed to have said, and you can't prove this historically, but he says the way you can tell who rules you is find out who you can't criticize. It's kind of true when you think about it. I mean, if you're in a mafia organization, you can criticize a lot of people, but you sure can't criticize the Don, you know? If you were in Cuba, you can criticize a lot of people. You can't criticize Castro. I mean, and it is kind of a lesson or kind of a meaning when people say, okay, if you want to know who rules over you, find out. And whether Voltaire said that or not is not important. The important thing is the principle. But it's even more, I think, transparent and clear and understandable when you realize that not only can you not criticize them, you can't even mention them as the people who rule over you. You can't even identify your rulers for what they are. You're not allowed to make a point that all these leading media that I was going through, Facebook with Zuckerberg, you know, Walt Disney, which was taken over, was a Christian publication, you know, media conglomerate, taken over by Eisner and then Iger, now Chapek, all Jews. The names change, but the Jewish race remains. I mean, it's pretty amazing. I will talk to Slattery. Let me finish this one little narrative. Tell him to hold on. I got a little message that Dr. Slattery is going to come on in a minute. And that'll be good because we're going to go into Ukraine to a lot of depth. In fact, I tell you what, go ahead and bring Slattery on now. Dr. Slattery, I'd like to speak to you now because I was just getting to a point that you've been making, and I'm going to let you make the point. But come on in.
Yeah, I'm here.
Great. Glad to have you on, Dr. Slattery.
I'm here. I was just sitting here doing my taxes. What else would I be doing on April 7th?
I hope you enjoyed the single narrative I've had, the Rush Limbaugh type.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you did. Well, look, I was just getting ready to give them one of your prescient and powerful analogies.
I just want to make sure. To have 4 out of 4 posts be Jews would be 6 million to 1 or 6.125, something like that.
Okay.
If it's 3 out of 4, it's only 31,250 to 1.
Oh, 31,000
so, I mean,
to 1. That's
just
that's
a coincidence.
Coincidence. We like that, yeah. Yeah, I remember you told me that, but there's a lot of things. If we go, the interesting thing is if we go to the 5 biggest media corporations and you worked out that percentage, that is an amazing percentage. Jews are only 1/5 of 1% of the population of the planet, right?
Right.
And these are global media, the biggest media in the world. And when you think about that and you just do the math, and because Jews are, that makes, if Jews are 1/5 of 1%, that means there's one Jew in every 500 people, correct? I think that's right.
Yep, 1 out of 500.
That's right. So to get the pure odds, and that doesn't, you know, that's not taking into an impact education, it's not taking into other impacts, but still, if you look at even IQ and smartness, look at all the smart Chinese there are, and there's 1.4 billion of them and 17 million Jews. You know, it's not because there's more smart Jews than there are smart Chinese or more smart Jews than there are Europeans by any means. It's, in fact, it's not even close. And so that figure, anyway, that works out in just pure odds of demography, the likelihood that a Jew or that all five of the top positions of media, just like you would say, you know, the five top teams of the NBA or something, right? But then that's a different set there, but anyway, and you try to figure the odds, and if you tried to guess the top five out of that market, well, if you do it in terms of the world's population, what does that work out to? I think it's 31, it's unbelievable figures, 31 trillion, what?
31 trillion, 250 billion to one. that it would just be a coincidence. Right. I mean, so for instance, if you have
correct, doctor,
if you have 500 marbles in a jar, okay, and 499 are green and one is blue, okay, and you just close your eyes and stick your hands in the jar, and the odds of you pulling out the blue one are 500 to 1, right? Well, let's just say you
did. And if you did it five times in a row,
if you do that five times in a row, you keep throwing that one blue marble back into the jar, mixing it up, and then doing it five times in a row. Yeah, the odds of that, you can do this easily on a I'm doing my taxes, so I've got my spreadsheet up, and you just do the number 500, put it, you know, equals, what do I use, Open Office, and so the equals, and then in parentheses the number 500, and then you can put a little caret top there that means raise it to this to such and such power, and then you have five. So it's
a mathematical formula.
You can do it. If you're good at this stuff, you can do it in your head. If you want to check your
I know math. You first did it in your head when we first talked about
it. Well, yeah, because when we were talking about it, I had to do it in my head because I was walking my dog.
Right.
And I mean, honestly, my dogs are good at math, and so they kind of help.
So we're going into the whole Jewish supremacy thing today, and
if I can just add a little bit to that. So I mean, obviously, it's not random. It's not, nobody really expects it to be random. You don't expect because these jobs aren't handed out just to random people. So you wouldn't expect it to be random. But they're always saying, oh, they just happen to be Jewish. Oh, he's saying that this person just happens to be Jewish. Well, they don't just happen to be Jewish. So. Okay, well, if it's not just happening, if it's not just kind of a random thing, then what is it? And Kevin McDonald was on Red Ice Radio within the past week or so, and I listened to it at night, and unfortunately it was late, and I did wind up falling asleep, but not before I heard him take apart their next line of defense is, well, the Jews are just smarter, right? And there's two things wrong with that. One is what Kevin McDonald was getting at, saying, well, look, you know, they're such a small part of the poor population, even if they do average smarter, at every IQ level, if you're talking about 115, you're talking about 130, we're talking about 145, they're still way outnumbered by whites. And, you know, if you're talking about the world, they're by Chinese, by Japanese. So they're just way outnumbered. So that doesn't explain it either. But even if it did explain it, and this is something you and I were talking about on a previous dog walk, even if it did explain it, would it have been okay according to everybody out there, would it have been okay for white South Africans to rule black South Africans simply because they have higher IQs? Nobody would have said it was okay. Because they'd say, well, yeah, but the whites would be ruling in their own interests. They wouldn't be ruling on black interests. And, you know, there's something to be said for that. Well, the same thing here. I don't care if they're smarter. I don't care if they're the five smartest people in the world. They're not ruling in our interests. They're ruling in their own interests.
Of course.
And so, yeah. So, even if you wanted to go along with that smarter thing, which isn't.
And by the way, we have evidence then. So the smart thing doesn't work. Because, as you know, Jews are maybe 3-4% at the most of the top National Merit Scholarship winners. Whites are 72% of that. And yet, Jews are vastly overrepresented to whites in the Ivy League. in especially in places like Harvard and Penn and places like that and Yale and all this. And it's just amazing when you look at the numbers. And Hillel, and even though we're not sure about these figures being right, but these are the, kind of the official figures of Jewish enrollment in universities, and they argue, they've had two different figures that I've seen. I've seen two different things, and I think almost they're listening to our show sometimes because I think they're trying to hide the figures on the undergraduates. But they didn't. They felt pretty safe in saying at one point that 60% of the graduate students at Harvard, which is, by the way, you get a doctorate degree from Harvard or a master's degree, I mean, your ticket's punched. I mean, you get that degree from Harvard. You go to any other school as a professor of history or something, you'll be head of the department in no time. If you write a book, you're going to get it published a lot more than somebody from other podunk school in Mississippi. Yeah.
This is something Kevin McDonald was pointing out. When you get the PhD from Harvard, you're going to go on and you can. The only people who are going to teach at Harvard are pretty much the people from Harvard or maybe from a few other of the very top schools. So the people who get the PhDs from Harvard, they go and they teach at Duke and University of Chicago and MIT. And then the people that get their PhDs from those schools are going to go on and they're going to teach at the top state schools, the University of Virginia, University of Indiana, and then the people who get their PhDs are going to go teach at the second tier schools, and it's very, very hierarchical. And so
when the vast majority of the professors hired by Elena Kagan, Supreme Court Justice, when she was teaching at Harvard, And the vast majority of our hirees were Jewish, apparently, to our study, right? Those professors at Harvard would have incredible increase of probability of becoming a judge of a state or a state Supreme Court or a federal court or a federal circuit court or a federal appeal court or whatever, right? Or the Supreme Court, just like she got there, right? So This is amazing. So, but this isn't based on their ability. This is based on their ethnic racism. It's based on the fact that there's no people more than this. And you and I are discussing this today. I don't know if we can, privately. Or I was talking about this, with you this morning privately. And we were just talking about, why are they doing this and how do they do all this? And I agree with you. I don't think it's like a Protocols of Zion kind of a scenario in the sense of, four or five candlelit people with earlocks or whatever, plotting out all the moves they're going to make. But I think the biggest reason for this is the distinctive difference with the religion, which is what a code that people live by, the religion of what's called Judaism as compared to Christianity and Islam or any other religion, Confucianism or paganism or whatever. Because the truth is that Judaism as a major religion is a religion that's fundamental character is that it's about a people. It's about their race. It's about their genealogy, which they very carefully catalog, right, in their scriptures. And they very carefully talk about in their Talmud. And Judaism is just as much about the Jewish people being the true chosen people of God. Even the Jewish rabbis even call it that they believe that Jews are the tissue of God. The Talmud says that if you hit a Jew, then you're actually hitting God himself because the Jews are holy. The chief rabbi of Israel, by the way, to show you again, that's not an earlocked convention or something. The head Sephardic rabbi of Israel, who was the head of this Chass party, really, the titular head of it, really, he did a big lecture to the entire Israeli nation. It was a weekly lecture, and his lecture said that the only purpose of Gentiles on this earth, the only purpose of any Gentile, which is 99.8% of the population of the earth, according to the Jewish demographers, is the only purpose of Gentiles on earth is to serve that Jewish tiny minority. That's the only purpose, that's the only meaning for them in life, is to serve Jews. And he goes on to say, very pejoratively, he says, why would a Jew want a Gentile to live long? He said he wanted his Gentile to live long because he, just as he wanted his donkey to live long so he can serve his Jewish master. He literally said this. And that Gentiles remain to bind and sieve and dig and so forth. And he says this, and it didn't meet any incredible why. There was no expose of this on 60 Minutes, right? None. Or any media in the world. And yet this guy got the biggest funeral in history. And yet he basically said that the purpose of Gentiles were to be slaves to Jews. So how do you explain that? And so the institution was so vital in the diaspora, you know, the Jewish communities in where they were very outnumbered by their Gentile neighbors, as they were like a besieged people and in their walled ghettos, which they actually created themselves at first because they wanted their community of their own people rather than Gentiles. They literally practiced this absolute practicing of an understanding that Jews are first the chosen people of God. And I don't think so. So anyway, so got a message there. So they practice this, not only that they're the chosen, but the Gentiles are essentially evil, that the Gentiles are dangerous creatures. And the Talmud has stuff in it like only the best of Gentiles should be killed because smart Gentiles and well-to-do Gentiles and effective Gentiles are dangerous to Jews because Gentiles are naturally anti-Semitic. And don't let them read the Talmud. Don't let them read our Jewish doctrine. So when you have a religion like that, that really preaches that Jews are the superior people of the world, that they are actually the chosen of God, you can't really get more racist than that. And then you basically say the only purpose of Gentiles is to be slaves to you, and that you have to also watch out for them. I mean, I think the Talmud says that, really kind of crazy that they were like 60 million Jews or something at one time killed by some sort of program against them and historical, which is untrue, of course. But they really are just paranoid like this. And I think it has a lot to do with their power. And that's why Judaism, even though a lot of Jews aren't practicing Judaism, they're not going with the Orthodox churches, but they are also raised in that milieu, and Israel itself, they allow itself to be a Jewish religious state, which sets its marriage policies and its immigration policies and its social policies of life, about everything from abortion, which is very restricted, for gay marriage, gay adoption, for all these issues, which is so interesting, which is exact opposite for its own country than the Jewish diaspora against other people who are non-Jews.
So, yeah, and the importance of the Jewish religion in Jewish attitudes today, really, it's hard to. I shouldn't say it's hard to. You can overemphasize it, but you can also underemphasize it. It's very, very important, in spite of the fact that so many Jews really aren't religious, and so many Jews are actually atheists. But even for the atheist Jews, there is a massive influence on their thinking from these Jewish religious traditions. Now, often in the morning, you know, I'm out there with my dogs on a power walk, and you're getting ready for your show, and we'll often have a bit of a powwow beforehand. And today, we had one that started kind of late, and it got interrupted because all of a sudden, you know, we realized it was a minute before your show. And we were talking about this. We were talking about we don't really think there's a literal council of elders of Zion who are sending out directives to everybody, right? And I had asked you your opinion on how is it that so many Jews, it's not as if Jewish thinking is a monolith, but they tend to be able to coalesce around issues like mass immigration. And so you have very, very widespread support for mass immigration, for things like gay marriage or homosexuality or the, you know, the tranny agenda, for anti-whiteness, right? The Black Lives Matter. And mm-hmm. you were going back to that, to the wellspring of Jewish thought, which really is their religious tradition. What I was actually trying to get at, and our conversation was cut short, was not so much the source of the attitudes, but the mechanism for translating, for disseminating policy positions in real time, right? I mean, you can't really go back into... Well, you could go back into Jewish religious writings and try to wean out what the thinking would be on the Ukraine issue or on trannyism or Black Lives Matter. But, you know, that would take some work. And that there is some other mechanism that is facilitating the consensus that or, you know, the basic consensus, the more or less consensus that Jews come to regarding so many issues, you know. And that was really what I was trying to get at. And so I'll just throw that out for you.
That's interesting.
What's the mechanism? How is it that Tucker Carlson? Well, I mean, no, I'll just throw it out just like that.
But Tucker Carlson, you know.
Well, Tucker Carlson.
I think the mechanism is many-folded. I think the mechanism is many-folded. But I do think that there's two aspects of all these things. I agree with Kevin McDonald, and I agree with modern genetic behavioral geneticists. And I've done a lot of reading and studying that, as you know, and you have too, I think. And I do believe that we have certain psychological traits that we also inherit. And there are certain breeding patterns that will represent certain psychological traits. For instance, ethnocentrism has been shown to be a trait passed down, but people that are ethnocentric tend to be ethnocentric, even if they're adopted twins and they're separated by great distances in politics and everything else, but they're ethnocentric. And even though we don't think of personality traits as being inherited, there's a great deal of evidence that there are. And there's no question that I think Judaism as a religious teaching also helped cement certain traits. It doesn't mean all Jews are going to do that, but Jews tend to be more ethnocentric in the real sense. Because Jews that were more attracted by Gentiles, and Gentiles lived all around them, Gentile beauty and Gentile values and Gentile culture, and they intermarried or they went with a Gentile, in most cases until very recently, for sure, but in most cases for thousands of years, they were expelled from the Jewish community, and they were an outcast. So the Jewish gene pool changed over time, and that could have an impact. I also believe that Judaism is that uniting kind of thing which basically stresses to Jews that Jews have to stick together, that they have a great destiny, and they teach them to be proud of themselves, they teach them to celebrate themselves. And they teach that they're better than anybody else. I mean, all the Jewish religious tradition is that you can't even drink from the same bottle, not even in terms of the mouth, but just you can't even get wine poured from the same bottle, Orthodox Jewry, that the Gentiles getting wine poured from, because Gentiles are unclean. So you have a very different standard, and this standard becomes translated in many areas of the culture. It's kind of like asking, why do packs of wolves all over the world of a particular breed of wolf, why do they have the social traditions they have, their unity and their leadership traditions and their certain, you know, the activities, the personality similarities in all these different wolves, even though they don't have really formal schools, but I think it's both the socialization within the pack, and I think it's also something that's in their heredity. Why can simple organisms like ants have within them the plans or the architecture to build magnificent anthills that would be the equivalent of a thousand-story building, right, without it collapsing on them? And all the different traits of behaviors which enable, you know, queens and drones and workers and things of that nature with those kinds of animal kingdoms. So I think it's a combination of factors. It's both the socialization. The queens have to be fed the queen jelly for the bees, right? But at the same time, it's also a matter of heredity, and I think that plays in so many aspects of the results of people. Does that sound like a reasonable answer to that question to you?
Yeah, it sounds reasonable. You see, with me, one of the things is it's very easy. Like, it's very easy to conceptualize the command structure of the military, which mm-hmm. I've never been in the military. And, you know, so it's supposed to be the general told the
colonel, the colonel told the captain told the lieutenant told the sergeant, and down, on down the line. I've never been in the military. I've heard jokes where, you know, that's one way going down. Where you're going up, the ranks. The private might tell the corporal that this is a pile of, you know, excrement, right? And as it goes up, they soften it a bit, and by the time, you know, partway up, it's like, well, it is fertilizer, and then, well, it's very fertile, and then, you know, it becomes a wonderful idea by the time it gets back up to the top to the general. But at any rate, it's very easy to conceptualize a kind of chain of command where you got somebody barking orders, and then they get carried out. And I don't think that's how our Jewish power structure works. If there was, it would have to be a center. Who would be the general? Or the marshal, you know, the five-star general.
I think it's more of a group ethic. I agree. I think they have
and
like
group ethic, and even then, like you could have a committee. You yeah. really could have the Learned Elders of Zion. Okay. But even then, would the AIPAC conference be that? Would it be the cabinet of the Israeli government? Would it be the president of the 50?
I think it's a multifaceted thing.
And by the way, those are all separate groups.
There's Let's very, take a question a before the break, too, and there. See, get a couple and questions, not, and go to the Ukraine in a second.
And there's those groups, and even those groups don't include the heads of the media corporations, right?
Right, and there's a lot of power that Jews have simply for they are. But it's interesting that they do let certain groups police all the organizations in a collective will to suppress, you know, their exposure as a people. Like they let all these major media corporations practically in the world let the ADL police not only their employees in those corporations, but also and their writers and their producers and all that. But they also let them police, you know, the general people in social media and other internet. Let's take a question or two real quickly if people can keep them short, and we'll try to get an answer.
All right. Do we have somebody? I
don't know if we have enough time now. So let's take the questions in the beginning, but let's just make sure that the half hour next, after we take a few questions, and we'll try to take them real quickly.
Yeah, are we getting callers? I don't see
that. We are getting some callers, but we'll take a few questions, and then what we'll do is we'll after the break, but we're going to try to get that done soon so we can really get on Ukraine in this last 30 minutes.
Right. Let's take one first. We have
okay.
We
let's do it.
One now.
Let's do take John. It. Let's do John okay. in Colorado, and then we have a couple of minutes, and then you can respond after the break if we need to.
Sounds good.
Hello,
John. Yes. Hi, it's David Duke here.
Hi, Dr. Duke. Yeah, I followed you when the Spotlight newspaper started through the Barnes Review. Thank you for all you've done. I'm glad to hear you.
Wow. Thank you.
I like you talk about Jewish. I read books, a lot of books about it. Dr. Kevin Barrett. Kevin McDonald, and the man in France who just got in prison, I think it's Harvey Ressem, he talks about that, and mm-hmm. Jewish religion, the Talmud, and all that stuff. I appreciate that, and keep it up. I hope you can come back more. I heard you on the Intel report last month. But when you talk about Ukraine, you think I'm curious. You've been living in Russia. Can you tell, what do the Russian people think about all that's going on? You know, you don't hear that. You're hearing all
Well, I just talked to a good friend of mine in Russia just night before last, and they told me that in the beginning there were a lot of young people that were really really were concerned because they saw a future toward the West and you know in business and all sorts of other things, and so they weren't too that much popular in favor of the war, some of them anyway, especially some of the more erudite, you know, in the with it group, the woke group. But but since they've been sanctioned, and what they've done, like Facebook is blocking them and all that, and since they've been sanctioned, they're all turning now, and they're very, very supportive of Putin and Russia, and they tell me that Putin has never been more popular than he is right now in Russia, and that's a good thing, I think.
We got to take a break, guys. Sorry.
Okay.
My computer didn't fire. I want the truth. You can't. We'll be back in three.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Yeah! Hi, Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
We are living in dangerous days, and I am frightened by what you say. It chills right to the core, this talk.
Filling in for Michael Rivero. And thank you so much for being with me today, folks. I'm really, really enjoying this. And we're just talking about Jewish supremacy. Dr. Patrick Slattery is talking with me as well. We're taking a few questions, so if you can make them short, we're not going to be taking more questions too long because we have to get in to some of the facts surrounding the entire Ukrainian situation. And that's one thing I definitely need to talk about today in this last quarter of the show, because I have a lot of knowledge, as you know, in Ukraine. Lived there a couple of years, lived in Russia as well. I've got many friends there, and I think I can really give you some authoritative information about what's going on in Ukraine and what's happening in Ukraine, as well as anybody, probably almost anybody in the world, unless somebody may be living there for the entire time and being there right now. But anyway, here we go. So let's just take another question. And Dr. Slattery, are you there now?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So let's take a question or a quick comment, but try to make it quick, folks, because I want to get into the Ukraine stuff if I can.
Rebecca, go ahead.
Okay. Hi, David. I had one question. I had seen a clip years back, Cynthia McKinney, and mm-hmm. Is it true that the Congress, they're expected to sign a document supporting Israel?
That's, I think that is actually true. I don't, you know, I've served in the House of Representatives in Louisiana, so I don't know what's going on. That was been a more recent thing. But there's no question of the fact that they are asking, what they do is they're polling Republicans, and they're demanding an answer on Republicans of what they're going to do with Israel. And the truth is that the true position of almost every member of Congress is more like Pelosi said the other day, and she's on tape, and she's in an interview. And so they ask her a question about Israel, and she says, America could crumble to the ground, but we will always, always, no, even if America crumbles to the ground, we're always going to basically put Israel first and do whatever Israel needs. If that doesn't show the insanity of all this, and by the way, Trump, and again, I must say that, you know, I supported Trump pragmatically against Hillary and against Biden, and we're seeing what Biden's doing right now. But at the same time, he's been a big disappointment in many, many ways. Yeah. But one thing he did say, which he said positive things about Israel, but he did say the Jews just literally controlled the Congress of the United States. That's, you know, like it's not a bad thing. But again, Trump does admit some things that nobody else will do in politics. So,
yeah. If I could just jump in real quick.
Yeah.
I've met Cynthia McKinney a couple of times. I didn't ask her specifically about this, but this quote comes from an interview she had with a Black American Muslim journalist who was working for, I believe it was Press TV. And when she said that, I saw the interview. I took it as figurative. I didn't take it as literal. Mm-hmm. That was my impression. That she didn't mean a literal oath.
But even in state government, I must say this, Doctor. When I served in the House of Representatives in Louisiana, we get these questionnaires that are sent by these major, powerful Jewish organizations. And they ask specific questions about what's your positions on Israel. And I am absolutely certain that every member of Congress does that. And I'm absolutely certain that just about every member, I don't know what some of the ones from Minnesota do right now. You know, we were talking about that before. But I definitely believe that almost every member of Congress feels like they've got to sign that, oh, yeah, I'm absolutely loyal to the state of Israel. So we'll see. I don't know if it's figurative or meaningful. But I do know that even as a state representative, I was getting these kind of polls from Jewish organizations. And by the way, I did not return those with saying I want to support Israel.
Hey, guys, we have full lines, so I don't know if you want to take one more call or just take...
Let's take one more, and then we'll get into Ukraine.
We got Mark. Oh, Rick in Arizona. Go ahead.
All right, Dr. Duke, I got a quick question for you. After all the people that Donald Trump pardoned, who does he love more, the people of Israel or the people of the United States? I'll take your answer off there.
People of Israel, for sure. And that's where the political pressure comes from. And it's disgusting.
That's love more or fear more?
That's a good answer. That's a really good, interesting answer that says a lot. You know, you're totally correct. I also believe that there's like a Overton window, and it's like sometimes there's a certain pragmatism as well. I think on the whole situation, I think Trump has been better for us than bad for us, in the sense that we now have fake news as a common vernacular in this country. He challenged so many different things. He ran on we should be friendship with Russia. He wasn't. But at the same time, one of the reasons why I think there's so much pushback right now with this anti-Russian narrative, which is Jewish, totally Jewish control, is because they knew, or because they're familiar with the fact that they tend to attack Trump, saying that he's too cooperative to the Russians, right? And he allows Russian interference. And so, but this is there's a lot of things in there. He also went for the Republican Jewish Coalition, and he said, "You're not going to give me any money because you want to control your politicians." The Jews hated that. I mean, there's so many other things like that I could point to, but. Do I like what Trump did? No. Do I find disgusting that this Kirchner guy was in the White House? It was horrible. And so I agree with you that Trump certainly not our savior, and I have many disappointments with Trump. At the same time, considering the alternatives we had, you know, I don't know who else we had at that time once he was the nominee. And I believe that we have to make decisions on any candidate to consider what's best for us and what's bad for us. We've seen the shutdowns that have come about and what's going on with the government right now. Right now, our country is being flooded with more aliens than ever before. Right in this, it's just the first couple of months of the administration of Joe Biden, you know, and yes, the immigration considered, but at least Trump made some of these issues where the other Republicans in the last 30 years have not done that. So I see a pragmatic aspect to these questions as well as an ideological aspect to it. Next question, and then we'll go ahead.
Just add one thing to that? Doctor, you mentioned Mr. Lira, I forgot his first name, who lives in Ukraine. He's from Chile. What's his first name? You mentioned Gonzalo Lira. And he made the point, in his opinion, that had it not been for the 4 years of Donald Trump being in the White House, if it had not been for that, Victoria Nuland would almost certainly have been Hillary Clinton's Secretary of State. And this attack on Russia, and that's the way we view it, you know, it was a Russian invasion of Ukraine, right, but it was a result of very, very aggressive policies from the Victoria Nuland dominated State Department. It would have happened 4 years earlier. And those 4 years were necessary. Those 4 years that that Trump was in the White House, Russia was firming up its economy. It was moving. It was doing import substitution policies. It was making itself less vulnerable to economic warfare. And that's why Russia is able to survive this economic onslaught today.
That's interesting. That's it. Very interesting. And by the way, I would say, and I know there's going to be some pushback on this. I've gotten some pushback on it. There's a lot of things. I can't say that I'm pleased with everything Putin's done by any means or any stretch of the imagination. But at the same time, and you've pointed this out very well, and we're getting back in Ukraine now and Putin, is that he's certainly done more to resist them in so many ways than any other leader around the world. And he's caused more people to resist them. Mike Orban has tried to resist them in certain ways. And so, you know, I just look at what happened. We know that we had a Jewish government of Russia literally planned by these oligarchs. Just like they've got a Jewish government of Ukraine today. And that's what people have to understand. This is a Jewish government of Ukraine. This is a Jewish dictatorship over Ukraine. And that's what they were planning for Russia. And he was a smart guy, and he being a spy, and he figured out that he knew that he had to know from the very beginning that Yeltsin had all these Jews around him, these oligarchs like Berezovsky, Kaczynski. He pretended to be the friend of Berezovsky, the most powerful oligarch. He pretended to be the friend of Kaczynski. He pretended to be the friend of Khodorkovsky and all these guys, right? But he bided his time, when he got to be had the actual power in his hand, he called in the oligarchs and he said, look, you know, there are people with money, and I'm not going to necessarily go against any of you, but if you don't stop the corruption, if you don't stop the massive theft and criminality in our country, if you don't put Russia first, you know, I'm going to go after you. And he did go after the biggest oligarchs, like Kaczynski, who was actually the head of the Jewish Congress of Russia. Anybody thinks that Jews would like Putin going after the head of the Jewish Congress of Russia, which also controlled one of the biggest media, which, by the way, supported Yeltsin and turned the tide of it, along with Berezovsky, was the two most powerful Jews. He went against these people, and there's no question, and you can just look at the data today, there are some still Jewish oligarchs, but there's no question of the fact that the Jewish oligarchs have been replaced in many, many levels by far more Russians in the last few years. So Putin came in when 12 of the 13 of the oligarchs were Jews, and by, you know, after now 20 years, right, 2000, 20 years, according to the Jerusalem, you know, or the Jewish Times, which, by the way, is for Jews, they say this, and they say, and I don't think it's this information, this is from Jews, that there's 18 oligarchs now, a Jewish genealogy, of the 210 oligarchs. So whatever you want to say about how Putin has betrayed us in some ways, and not even allowing any of these people, I think is wrong, but, you know, in terms of these oligarchs, that there's no question that there's a reason why they hate Russia, and there's no question that Jewish global power doesn't like Putin. And the only other thing people can help understand, too, they often say, well, he's made, you know, trade deals and so forth with Israel, and Israel has tried to have good relations with Russia. But you have to understand, the Jews know, and the Israelis know, that world Jewry, the diaspora, which is much more powerful than Israel, but half the Jews of the world live in Israel now, just about. So they know that anything, you know, that when they sanction Russia from all the rest of the world, which is the biggest impact against Russia, they know that they're going to get the benefits of the trade to their Jewish, you know, overwhelmingly Jewish state, which is very critical to them. They know that fact. And so, and they also know that it doesn't matter what Israel does if Israel can get direct benefit of it, because they know the Jews of the world who control the Security Council that's non-Russian, who control the media of the world, is going to do whatever they want to destroy Russia, and they got to be on board with that, but they're going to get everything out of Russia they can while they can, in my opinion. And the Russians, by the way, are going to get everything they can out of trade deals as they can, just from a pragmatic standpoint. Okay, let's go back to the Ukraine issue. Doctor, why don't you start this off? Okay, what's the timing now? We got basically about 14 minutes or so. Yeah. So let's get going on the Ukraine. Let's start off. I'll just start off with it then. Okay, to understand Ukraine, to understand this conflict with Russia, I was talking about the history earlier when I brought you on, and I got up to the point where the Russians began to take over the party in their own country and then ultimately expose the Russian Communist Party for the murders. They began to scourge, they began to cleanse the higher echelons of their intelligence agencies, the Presidium, the Politburo, and the Duma of Jewish power. And there's no doubting that. And the Jews went in a full-bore, increasingly anti-Russian narrative ever since then. So a lot of people will want to say, no, Putin's a shill for the Jews, and they still control Russia and all that. Well, it's just not true. They really don't have the power that they had. We know that for a fact. Putin also supported the Orthodox Church. And I studied Jewish literature. I studied Jewish, you know, global think tanks and read all sorts of things from all over the world. And they say that the most anti-Semitic Christian force in the world of the Christian denominations is Orthodox, Russian Orthodox. They have a very, very powerful, what Jews say is an anti-Semitic doctrine. They don't like the fact that Putin supported the building of 60,000 churches and has been so supportive. He goes to Mass, he supports the church, and the church is extremely, and this goes on with Russian churches, the Orthodox churches all over the world. I've talked to dozens of their priests in the Russian Orthodox Church around America, in Europe and other places, and everyone I met, every single one I met, and often just went to local ones, invited by local people, every one of them was really clear on the Jewish question. That's not something the Jews would like.
Yeah, Dr. Simon? So people will look at Russia and they'll say, oh, well, there are, I mean, Putin has some Jewish oligarchs. So-and-so is a head of a, you know, Russian bank, this Jew, or right. This Jew's involved with the media. But you have to... You can't look at things just in absolute terms. You have to look at them in relative terms. And I'd say relative both chronologically and geographically. And when you look at Russia relative to the United States or any other white country, it's the level of Jewish
power in that country is lower, right? It's, I can't think of, I don't know, maybe Belarus, but basically any other major white country, the level
Well, there's far more Jewish oligarchs per capita in America, and especially of the critical things like media, yeah. right? And fundraising
Jewish
and
power
banks.
In America
far more Jewish capita per capita power yeah. in America than there is in Russia, right?
yeah, and then the other thing, compare it chronologically. When in the past century has there been less Jewish power in Russia? But certainly, if you're going to compare it to when Putin took over in 1999, when he was appointed as prime minister in 1999, and he was appointed basically by Jewish oligarchs. He was supposed to be their boy. And what happened yeah. to that? It didn't
he
work out so well for them.
But isn't that what spies do? Isn't that what a spy does,
yeah.
right? The spy, the way yeah. the spy works is he infiltrates the opposition, and he knew the Jews controlled Russia, and that I think Putin was actually a loyal Russian who was Russian. By the way, Putin celebrated Alexander Solzhenitsyn. He erected statues to them. He made compulsory reading in public schools, every public school practically, in Russia under Putin to read Gulag Archipelago 2. Now, that's not a communist that's going to do that for Alexander Solzhenitsyn. And in Gulag Archipelago 1 and 2, both those books talk about the Jewish oligarchs. And Alexander Solzhenitsyn's book, 200 Years Together, is considered an anti-Semitic book, and it's been suppressed in the English language. Even though, again, I don't think it's a perfect book, but let me tell you, it's a magnificent book. He shows who ran the death camps. He shows who ran communism. He shows the evil of these Jews. It also even goes back to history and shows the programs were all exaggerated in the Western world. So, you know, I mean, this tells me that this answers the question to me why they so hate Putin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they do hate Putin. You know, anybody that looks at the world cannot miss it. I don't think that the Jews hate Putin and they hate Russia and they want to destroy them. There's never been an equal effort to destroy the average citizen of any country more than they have in what they're doing to Russia right now, which is an immoral collective punishment, by the way.
It's very, very unprecedented. Now, one other comparison people like to make is they like to compare Vladimir Putin to some people have a, you know, a lot of they're fans of a particular avuncular world leader from, you know, the previous century with a mustache. And they'll like to say, well, you know, if you really want to go against Jewish power, this is what you do. Well, what happened to that leader's country after 12 years? It was in ruins, and it's never recovered, and probably terminally. It probably never will recover. You know, it had a nice lifestyle, probably in the 70s and 80s. I went there in the 80s, and Dusseldorf had a lot of Turks walking around, but it was still the country was still pretty much a white German country. But, you know, the thing is, Putin, he is taking a more cautious, he is a cautious person, and, you know, there's a lot of things he's been very patient with. He was patient for 8 years with the attacks on the Donbass. He was patient for 8 years with the coup government in Kiev. But, you know, now, hopefully, with only a limited war and not a regional war, not a world war. Hopefully, with a limited war, he's going to prevail. We'll keep our fingers crossed. He'll prevail,
and the limited war once they accomplish what they want to accomplish, they might end up making an extensive war in Ukraine and really have a true government change. One thing we do know about Ukraine, and this is the main point, I think we got to get off to the people listening right now. In my opinion, strongly, they've got to understand this. Ukraine is a Jewish dictatorship, period. The reason why Russia has done so much better than Ukraine, Ukraine's got all kinds of resources. They got magnificent resources. They got the breadbasket of Europe. They're a country the size of France with the richest farmland, the most temperate, perfect climate, in the perfect soil for agriculture. They've got massive mineral resources. They got massive resources of ore. They've got massive resources of natural gas and oil. They've got all these things going for them and strategic locations between both Russia and Europe and between North and South in Europe. And there's no question Ukraine is the poorest country in Europe. And as and again, Mr. Lira, as he points out so well, he says the biggest difference is that Putin came to power in Russia rather than people like Zelensky. He came to power and he stopped a great deal, not every all of it, but a great deal of the corruption in Russia. And the Russian people really, really benefited, while the Ukrainians, once the revolution took place in the 90s, the Jewish oligarchs and the Jewish organized criminals, like Milosevic is a perfect example, born in Ukraine, so many others, Kolokoski and all that. I mean, this guy is a Jewish actor. This is a Jewish dictatorship. And this Jewish dictatorship is literally murdering, destroying the homes, the buildings, the businesses, and the people of Ukraine on behalf of 0.13% of the population of Ukraine. Less than, I mean, one-tenth of, it's like one-seventh or one-eighth of 1%. Of the people. And while the Jews were massively evacuated from the country, these people in Ukraine are being served up as sacrifices, literally almost like a ritual sacrifice for the empowerment of the Jewish globalists and for the destruction of their biggest enemy, which is Russia.
Yeah. And, you know, like I say, I think Putin is playing a very long game, a patient game, and not necessarily even one that he is going to be involved in the end game. Maybe this is multi-generational. At any rate, it's patient. Now, if you're telling Americans, like our own listeners, oh, just be patient, stick with the plan, you know, say Donald Trump, you know, stick with the plan, just be patient. There's a lot of reason for Americans not to want to be patient. Because we see everything in our country getting worse. We see our share of the population going down every year. We see, the attacks on us increasing year after year after year. Everything is getting demonstrably worse in our country. So I can understand why Americans don't think patience is a virtue. But if you're in Russia or if you're in China, and actually, you are seeing your living situation getting better and better. You're seeing a government that is responding to you. It's improving your lot, and it's becoming stronger. And you can tell somebody to be patient when the situation is getting better, when the prospects for the future do look brighter.
We're out of time, guys.
We're out of time, guys. Thanks so much, everybody. I'm sorry we didn't get to all your calls. Love y'all. Please go to davidduke.com, and also I'm going to be on tomorrow night with Ryan of, and it's going to be a great show. But thanks to everyone. I love you. Go to davidduke.com and listen to my show today. Bye-bye now.
At Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.